This message comes from NPR sponsor, Discover. Tired of not getting a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR. I'm Brittany Luce. And today, I'm bringing you something special. A conversation between me and my last co-host. You see, for those of you just getting to know me, I've been in the game for a minute. And for many, many years, I co-hosted podcasts with one of my closest friends, Eric Eddings. Most recently, we had a show called For Collared Nerds, which is what you're about to hear in 3, 2, 1. So, Eric.
Yes.
I have a confession to make.
Okay. What is that confession?
I am ready to admit to the world that I have finally become mom curious.
Wow. Okay. So that, for what it's worth, this is a big deal. This is a big deal.
Why do you say that?
I mean, as someone who has tried to push you toward a parenting.
Just to clarify this for those of you all who aren't privy to our private conversations, Eric has been trying to push me toward parenthood since he became a father.
Yeah.
I.e. when I was 26. Okay? Just to clarify.
I think overall it was fair. But this is amazing. I'm excited because I know there was hesitancy for a while.
There was some hesitancy, you know, and I guess I should clarify what mom curious means for people who might not know. Like, I guess what I'm saying is after years and years of waffling on the decision as to whether or not, you know, becoming a parent was something I really wanted to do or not, or even just whether or not I'm right for the job, I'm now secure in my desire to be a parent. Mm-hmm. And I think I've kind of figured out what kind of mom I want to be.
I am very curious. What type of mom do you want to be? Do you want to be just like me as a dad?
Don't want to be just like
you
as
like,
a dad.
Make that into a mom thing?
No, we're going to talk about the difference between moms and dads later in this episode. Right. But I decided that I want to be a bad mom.
Okay. Hi, I'm Eric.
And I'm Brittany.
And this is For Colored Nerds,
the weekly show where we peel back the layers of Black culture that we rarely discuss in mixed company.
And if you haven't heard already, Brittany wants to someday be a mom. A bad mom.
Not just any bad mom, though. I want to be a bad Black mom. A bad Black mom who tells her kids to do right but follows Jason Lee drama like it's her soap opera. Who likes green juices and Casamigos. Who always has her nails done, but the hair is sometimes giving bonnet. I'm sorry, Monique. This is the representation we need.
So if you haven't realized it already, this episode is all about our representations and expectations of motherhood, especially Black motherhood on screen.
We'll talk about what shows get it right, what shows get it wrong, and most importantly, how a show about a middle-aged actress with 3 kids who supports her mom and ex-husband may be the blueprint for what's to come. I know, scandalous. Find out which show after the break.
Support for NPR and the following message come from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows 2 women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu. This message comes from NPR sponsor, Discover. Here's a familiar situation. You have a question about your credit card. You call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone. If only you had a Discover card. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
What does it mean to be Black in America? In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as Black experiences, you'll hear it means everything. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.
Eric, you know, it's going to be that time. I'm currently child-free.
Yes.
To clarify. Mm-hmm. But my fiance and I, you know, we're starting to imagine a future where our two becomes three.
Wow.
You know, we're a very solid, loving partnership. We've been together over 6 years now at this point. You know, our careers are coming together. And also, too, I mean, to be honest, like the last year and a half of the pandemic, like I think just like the amount of pressure and everything that was going on in the world, I think made both of us realize just how much, you know, we can rely on each other when things get tough and how like great we are at working through conflict and coming to consensus and, you know, sharing with each other. And so I've been spending a lot more time thinking about like how I might inhabit the role of mother.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough. If you remember when I even thought about how I might inhabit the role of a father, I spiraled. It was actually the thing that got me in therapy, thankfully.
I was going to say, if I remember, how could I forget?
For what's worth, I understand how big thinking about that can be, like how affecting that can be.
It's a lot. And I'll be honest with you, like I've been having trouble envisioning myself as a mom. Like, for starters, like I'm not great with kids.
I don't know if that's true.
Well, I'll say it's not necessarily like my ministry. You know what I mean? Like I like children.
Sure.
But you know that thing that people who are good with kids have where they just every time a baby sees them, they just actually my fiance is like that. Children and animals constantly want to like just be held by him and jump into his lap and talk to him. Mm-hmm. I like enjoy children. I like my friends' kids. I adore my niece, mm-hmm. you know, my baby cousins. My niece, that's my homegirl. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't have that thing that like ineffable quality that like people who are good with kids have. The other thing is that I grew up with like a super mom.
Your mom is involved.
Yeah.
And has always been very involved.
I mean, my mom stayed at home with us after I was born. I'm the second of three girls. And, you know, I had sports and activities and museum mm-hmm. trips. And my mom taught Sunday school. I don't even go to church. And she made cupcakes for my birthday for, you know, my classrooms when I was a kid. And she was my Girl Scout troop leader. And she made my Halloween costumes by hand. And wow. I know. If I have a hole in my pants, I'm taking it to a tailor. Like, it's like my mom had all the skills. But I've come to the bittersweet understanding, realization, really, that I honestly... we'll probably never do a lot of those things. Like mm-hmm. a lot of what defines motherhood for me and what I grew up with mm-hmm. is just like, I'm not going to be that kind of mom. Like, you know what I mean? And it's a relief, you know, it's a little bit of a relief because I just couldn't live up to that. Big shoes to fill. But yeah, I mean, I think I have what it takes to be a parent, but it's like, okay, if I'm not going to be like super mom, then like, what kind of mom am I going to be? Like, what kind of mom do I want to be? Like, I had been stumped thinking about this mm-hmm. over the past like year, two, three, until I stumbled upon a little show called Better Things. Better Things is a half-hour FX comedy about working actress and single mother named Sam Fox, and she's played by Pamela Adlon, who also like writes and directs most of the episodes in the series. And, and by the time you get to the third and fourth season, I think she stars in, writes and directs every episode. And she's so good. Like, she's so good in the role. But it's about Sam Fox and her three daughters, Max, Frankie, and Duke, who are each played by really great child mm-hmm. actresses. Yeah. All really, really good. Sam also, in the series, cares for her aging mother, mm-hmm. a really interesting older British lady named Phil, who lives across the street. It's just a really good show.
Yes, Better Things. Okay, full disclosure, Better Things was always kind of on my list mm-hmm. of shows that everybody talks about. In a way that, like you can tell it's good.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, you gave me a list.
I did, a specific list.
A specific list of episodes to watch. And I gotta say, I loved it. It was it's really well done.
Yeah,
it's really well done. And it felt very, like, to be a 50-ish, like, older white woman, I found my you know, 35-year-old black self found some truth in it. So, yeah, I'm very curious. I have no idea how and why, like, how this connects. Uh-huh. But, yeah, I want to hear more. I'm ready.
So when I started watching the show, it was, like, warm enough that it felt good, but it didn't feel like a total escape watch, if that makes sense.
It wasn't trying to pacify you. It just was, there was catharsis. There's catharsis
there's
in the show.
There's real catharsis in the show. Like, I highly recommend watching it. I mean, it's kind of a perfect show. It's really well done. It's warm, it's sweet, it's sour at times. Mm-hmm. It's hopeful also, and it just feels really real. And what makes the show so interesting is Sam Fox's character. Mm-hmm. Like, it's interesting because obviously she's well off enough to like be able to like afford two mortgages in California. She was like a child star. Sam is a working actor. So she's like known enough that she gets recognized sometimes and that, like, she seems really well connected and is able to, like, book jobs. But she's also, like, in her late 40s, early 50s throughout the run of the show. So she's consistently disrespected for being too old and has to, like, audition for things she shouldn't have to audition for. She has to constantly deal with, like, sexism, misogyny, ageism. And then also she's not getting those big fat paychecks that allow you to, like, deal with all of the isms. Like, she still is definitely somebody who, like, she's doing well enough, but she also still has to get up every day and show up somewhere to be able to, like, provide the life that she does for her daughters. And also by extension, her ex-husband, who she basically funds his life on the show.
Yeah.
So you also understand that, like, she has a lot of stakes as far as her career on the show and why she has to work so hard. But yeah, like, Sam Fox as a character, even though I don't have much in common with her lifestyle-wise at all, she feels like a perfect blend of the kind of mom that I could see myself being. Like, she curses, but she also cooks for her kids a lot. And she frequently says the wrong thing, but she apologizes quickly. And she also maintains an independent life as an artist, like a working artist. But she also makes her daughters the center of her life.
And honey, you can be anything you want to be, seriously. But also, if you just get a job and get by, you're still going to love your life. Because life is good, even at its worst.
You came here just to say that to me?
Why? Was it I thought it was going to be good.
But yeah, like, I was like, oh, I could do this. Like, she also, like, is momly. Like, she is the sort of parent who, like, her kids' friends are always over the house and she's, like, welcoming and kind and warm, but she's not sweet.
Correct. There's a barbness.
Yeah.
And I think that one of the things I think that's interesting about her barbness is it comes from a real place of vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, she is someone who has emotions.
Yeah.
I think, at least I've experienced as a dad, there's a tension between wanting to express yourself to your kid and your kid needing to understand something, whether it be about what they've done or about life, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There can be a tension between actually wanting to say the thing that you feel to them. And
yes.
And she says what she feels.
She says what she feels.
For better or for worse.
But also, for better or for worse. But also, I mean, there are points in my life where my mom said what she felt. And it was what needed to be said.
Yeah.
Like, it was time for the kid gloves to come off or for the level of me and just be like, look, this is the game.
Yeah.
Like,
deal.
But Sam Fox is also a perfect example of what is now being called the bad mom trope.
Yes. So the bad mom trope, when you initially talked to me about, like, wanting to do this, and I got really excited because I don't know that I talk about this that often, but I mainline all the, like, I have seen Bad Moms 1, Bad Moms Christmas, because it's not Bad Moms 2.
Yes.
I watch, like, Working Moms.
You do watch Working Moms.
There's Single Parents.
Yep.
I've watched a bit of that. My point being, the dysfunctional parent, I would necessarily, I'd say, like, I've always, like, been interested in. So when you came to talk about it, I realized I got really excited to talk with you about it because it's a thing I actually don't, because of our friend group, you know, like, I haven't had many opportunities to talk about it. And I'm only just now entering in that with, you know, some of our friends who have had kids. And you who has just today become mom curious.
Now that your child is, like, six and a half.
So anyway, I'm just saying, like, I'm going to say all that to say, let's get into it. Bad mom's trope. Like, for you, like, how do we define that?
Okay, so I recently watched a great video from this YouTube channel called The Take. And the video was called The Bad Mom Trope Explained. And now I'm going to kind of, like, break down for you the way they broke down the bad mom trope in the video.
Let's do it.
The bad mom, basically, it's like she's a straight shooter. She's not afraid to put herself or her work before her kids sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes it's women who are really zany and out there, like Lucille Bluth from Arrested Development.
Yes.
but they're basically like moms that are depicted as closer to like three-dimensional human beings.
Yeah.
They're very imperfect, sometimes extremely flawed, but they really like lead with love. And I think that they exist specifically as an answer to sort of like the stay-at-home mother that we saw depicted on television throughout the 50s, 60s, 70s, ooh, and even into the 80s and 90s into today.
Too. Yeah.
I mean, so like examples of some characters of what that looks like. Selena Meyer from Veep. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Sam Fox from Better Things. Kate Foster from Working Moms,
yes. Oh,
which
Lord.
Is Eric's show. The moms from the hit film franchise Bad Moms.
Yeah.
And if you really want to take it back, like Roseanne Arnold from mm-hmm. Roseanne. And my queen, my girl, the fashion icon, the style queen, Peggy Bundy from Married with Children. I mean, she like couldn't cook. She didn't clean.
But always wore heels and like leopard print leggings.
Yeah.
Around that, she was fresh.
Like, yeah, she was fresh. She kind of like put herself together as like a tackier version of like what a 50s housewife would be. To quote the video, you know, they describe the bad mom as a complex, realistic depiction of a mom that reminds us that she's a human being. You know, we see from the mom's point of view.
Yes, that's important too. I feel like
everything that she's forced to deal with day in and day out. And also, the bad mom is a mom that decides not to let motherhood totally define her. She defends her right to be a human being, which runs antithetical to, I think, most people's ideas of what motherhood is. I mean, even still, if you look at statistics, you know, more women are working outside the home than they were in like the 50s or in the 70s. But women are doing more childcare and more housework than they were doing back in those days while still working full time. Which, I mean, goes to show a few things. It indicates that, like, men are not necessarily stepping up. You know what I'm saying?
True.
Dads and heterosexual couples aren't showing up. And there's actually studies that there's not enough research that's been done on same-sex couples, but early research indicates that things are more egalitarian in same-sex homes because
surprise.
Tasks are divided among who has the capacity, who has the time, who has the skill and the energy versus along gender lines.
Yeah.
And assumptions about those things.
Just something that's interesting about that, too, is like it makes sense as to also why, you know, during the pandemic, we heard reports of a lot of relationships ending.
Mm-hmm. And then women dropping out of the workforce.
And so, you know, I think you see both ends of that spectrum. You see, you know, people trying to choose.
Yeah.
Trying to choose between that career or that family.
It's unfortunate because that feels like you can have your career or you can have your family and you are nowhere in the and to be honest, like, that is one of the things that I'm the most fearful of in regards to having a child, is like the complete loss of my identity, not necessarily specifically as a parent or because I have to, you know, care for this other person, but more so like there's something that happens with moms that doesn't really happen with dads, where it's like, I think all parents experience some sort of like loss of identity is a huge change. You have to become selfless in a way that you haven't had to before. But even statistically, the expectations and judgment that mothers receive or even feel they receive is sometimes double what fathers express.
I can absolutely see that. I mean, I think there's a space that comes along with, you know, the patriarchy. And what I mean by that space is like there's an expectation of distance between dads and men in the family. Like, you know, it is not crazy, you know, if you're looking at a kind of older, coarser, like gender lines, to have the dad consistently be out working and like he's the person who doesn't make it home for bedtime. He's the person who doesn't do this thing.
Yeah.
And that's a thought of as a requirement because of his need to be out, you know,
making money.
But it's interesting that none of that actually applies to the other partner in that relationship, the mom, you know, who also might want to make money. Who also might need to make money.
Yes.
But then also still, there isn't that distance between how do you figure out what happens, you know, with the child in that relationship. So anyway, I just say like, it's something I think that like I realized not necessarily was afforded to me in my life. I think I've tried to exist outside that dynamic. Mm-hmm. But people talk to me about it. People are like, oh, well, you know, people will say like, oh, that's a thing. You know, can your wife do that? Or like, can somebody?
Really?
Yeah, I've heard stuff like that all this. I've heard people say the wildest.
Like what? Like,
just like, you know, I mean, you know, like I got divorced.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in the divorce, you know, we were trying to figure out custody. And for what it's worth, it was a, you know, pretty amicable situation. It wasn't like, as far as divorces go, it, you know, we were in a room all the time together.
Yeah, yeah.
But during that, people were kind of coming to me and they were like, you're just going to do weekends? And I was just like,
no.
I was like, what? No, it's my child. I love her. I want to take care of her as much as I possibly can. And anyway, I just say like, they were like, oh, well, you know, I thought you might want to work. That's more her. I have people who, you know, were close to us would say things like that. And so I'm just like, I just have to be like, no, I want to do this thing. But I say that less about me and more so what that means about what the perception is that I think moms and women can take.
Yeah.
And I think that has been wild. And I will also say, just, you know, as a person who has tried to act differently in terms of the stereotypes and the kind of the tropes that exist around parenting and being a dad, you know, like I'm in a situation where it's like I am lucky enough that, you know, my wife and I and my co-parent, we work together as like three people to take care of one kid. And we, it's real.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine, you know what I'm saying? Like, I just say that to, I'll come back to, I can't imagine how difficult it is to feel like you have that binary choice.
Yeah.
And then to have society in all ways.
Yes.
Enforce it.
Yes. Because the other thing that's causing working women to also be doing more housework and more childcare is like some of that is expectation. Like they're feeling this judgment and they're feeling these expectations. Just a quick aside about dads, actually. The bar for dads in pop culture is low.
Yeah.
Just like, I hate to say it, the bar for fathers in real life is frighteningly low.
Yeah.
So I was looking to see if like the same outlet that I had enjoyed, you know, the Bad Mom video had something about dads that could be comparable that I could sort of like play off of. The Take doesn't have a video about the bumbling dad trope. The only, as far as I could see, video about a dad is a tribute video to Jack Pearson, the late patriarch of the Pearson family on This Is Us, played by Milo Ventimiglia. It's a tribute video about how great of a father he is for being affectionate and kind and putting his family first, despite his alcoholism and abusive upbringing. So those qualities are pitched to the viewer as unusual, even though those qualities are routinely expected as below the baseline from others.
Yeah. And just in theory, as a parent, like in theory, when you read about what the parent should do, that is what a parent should be affording their child. So it's just interesting that like once it goes from parent to mom and dad, it misses.
It just misses it. And so, I mean, you know, it's no surprise then that these bad mom characters would feel like a balm to a lot of women and mothers in pop culture. But they are overwhelmingly white.
I wanted to come back and be like, okay, so you mentioned like Jim Rosen, all of these folks. And I watched the movies. I watched Bad Moms. I watched
Bad Moms in Paradise. You watch Bad Moms Electric
Bad Moms
Boogaloo.
Island. Like, Bad Moms Island. No, I watch all this stuff. And I could probably count the number of black people who spoke. On maybe one hand, it barely into two.
Yeah. The lack of bad black moms, it is astounding and it means something. And even like, you know, like you said, in the Bad Moms franchise, the three main moms are white. And most of the women that you see speaking in the movie are white. And then even on a show like Working Moms, you know what I'm saying? Or even like Single Parents has some diversity, but the action is centrally around a single white mom. Mm-hmm. You see that time and time again throughout pop culture. And there's a reason for that. But I want to save that until we come back from the break. So after the break, we are going to dig into, well, actually, we're going to like look under, you know, rock, creek, nook, and cranny to find the bad black moms and also unpack a little bit of why they're so hard to find to begin with. So we are going to get into that.
I'm ready for that.
After the break.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Dive into the chilling new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, the riveting adaptation of the acclaimed true crime book. Based on shocking true events, Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a murder that lays bare a small community's darkest secrets. Go deep into the hidden world of the town's tormented teenagers as detectives race to solve the sinister crime. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu. This message comes from NPR sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC health/whatsyourwhy.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Hero Bread. Burger buns, tortillas, and fluffy breads, and oh, so many carbs. Hero Bread makes healthier versions of these carb favorites. Fewer calories, 0 to 2 grams net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, great taste. With more of the dietary fiber and protein you want with no compromise. Don't skip out on your favorites. Just use Hero Bread. Get 10% off your order at hero.co with code HEROPOD at checkout. That's HEROPOD at HERO.CO.
This election season, you can expect to hear a lot of news, some of it meaningful, much of it not. Give the Up First podcast 15 minutes, sometimes a little less, and we'll help you sort it out, what's going on around the world and at home. 3 stories, 15 minutes, Up First, every day. Listen every morning, wherever you get your podcasts.
Before the break, we were talking about how the bad moms trope, it's actually kind of a good thing.
Yeah.
And it seems like something that like a lot of moms are responding to in pop culture and embracing in a really positive way and that feels real to them. But we also remarked on the fact that like bad black moms are disturbingly hard to find.
Yeah.
That is because black women tend to portray literally perfect mother figures on television. I will say like there are a couple black mom characters who kind of did stray from the beaten path, like in Motherhood, Rochelle from Everybody Hates Chris, Lisa Landry from Sister Sister, Maya Wilkes from Girlfriends. Mm-hmm. But Motherhood either wasn't the focus of those shows or the focus of the show or the point of view of the show is expressed from the children, like with Sister Sister or Everybody Hates Chris. It kind of leaves the moms to occupy like a very specific kid-friendly or like Sex in the City-friendly, you know, it's a girlfriend's-friendly space and doesn't really like allow them to have both sides of their personality plus their own rich inner life. You know, like there are some moms that have broken away from that. But by and large, the black supermom is like the thing to beat. And part of the reason why that persists and exists to begin with is because black mothers are penalized socially and in the carceral sense for showing up as anything less than perfect.
Yeah, I think it's they're penalized, but I also think there's a reasonable amount of pressure and expectation. You can't deny that. Like, both are very important.
Yeah.
Because the literal effects, like you said, you know, like, if you're late, you know, dropping your kid off to school so much, in certain, you know, school districts, if you're black, they're trying to bring you up on truancy issues.
I mean,
you know
what I'm saying? I mean, yeah.
I think those consequences are real and extreme for many black women. And I also think that the expectation is really deep as well. Like, you know, something I feel like I've heard my mom talk about anecdotally, never like super crystallized, but just like, you know, when you're on that soccer team and for what it's worth, like in Better Things, and it is your week to bring snack, you don't want to, you won't have the bad snack.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't want to be the parent. Usually I'm one of the like two or three black kids on the team.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? And you don't want to seem deficient. And there's a pressure to even sometimes project that like there's a sameness in how things come together to get to the snack.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And even though as ridiculous as that is, and I've seen my mom try to do everything and be a single parent, and you know what I'm saying? And like not be super well off, you know, like stringing it together sometimes. And I just, as I am now an adult and a parent, I now can reflect back and be like, that's wild.
I mean, yeah. I mean, like I don't have any kids, but like, I understand so much more now as an adult. I know what it felt like to have my mom snatch the life out of me because I started cutting up in public.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that, you know, I think because of a lot of conversations that people have about police violence and having to talk with your children, now there's this idea that, like, the only reason why your parent wouldn't want you to cut up in public is because you could get in trouble with an authority.
That's not it.
That ain't always it. It's because your mom does not want to know you if you start cutting up in public, not just because she's embarrassed, but because that's going to reflect poorly upon her. And you don't know who's out there, who's looking, who's going to see. Because, I mean, we're talking a lot about like white people or, you know, your kids' teachers or their schoolmates' parents. But also, I mean, other black people will dress you down for not being the type of mother that they think that you need to be. And actually, I mean, that brings us to the black supermom of today, Beth Pearson from This Is Us. Beth Pearson is a lovely character. This Is Us, this huge hit of a show. It comes on NBC every Tuesday night, and it centers on the Pearson family. And it kind of like plays with time. They jump back through the generations and they go off in all sorts of interesting storytelling directions. But one of the central characters in the show is Beth Pearson, played by Susan Kelechi Watson, who is Howard grad.
Yeah, shout out.
Yeah, shout out. And she brings so much warmth and vibrance to the character in a really beautiful way. But she is the mother I would love to aspire to be, but I just could never. Let's just start and stop with the fact that she and her three daughters all have new hairstyles every 3 to 5 days. First of all, that's assuming that my hair as well as my child's are going to be done. Most of the time, I'm going to be honest, I don't see it for myself.
Yeah.
I've been trying to get my fiance to practice on my head. But this is the thing. Like, Beth, in addition to having girls' hair hooked up, Beth be dealing with whatever Randall want to do. Randall is her husband, played by Sterling K. Brown. Randall be quitting his job without asking. Randall be bringing his long-lost birth father in without asking. Randall want to be taking 20-hour car trips during COVID.
Did he run for office?
Randall ran for office. I think he won, and then he ended up becoming, like, a city council member for a city that they do not live in. Oh, he bought an apartment building without asking. But Beth just be rolling with everything. We don't find out until the 4th season or 5th season that Beth had dreams of becoming a ballet dancer that were dashed, basically. And so she switched to something else altogether. She ends up losing her job. And finally, later, she's allowed to open her dance school. Mm-hmm. But that was something they brought in after seasons and seasons.
Yeah, aren't they going into the final season?
Yeah, I mean, like, they got critique, I think, for a long time that was like, Beth's great, but like,
she's not real.
This is not real. This is not sustainable. Yeah. And somebody would snap. Eventually, she does kind of push back. But again, it took seasons and seasons and seasons for that to happen, to get pushback. She is so absolutely selfless. She's just not realistic. Interestingly enough, do you know who plays Beth Pearson's mother?
Of course. It has to be
Felicia Rashad, who also plays
Everybody's Black Bob
everybody's
in
Black
How
Bob.
To Get Away with Murder. Yes, like yes, all yes. these things. Yes.
But she also played Claire Huxtable.
Yes.
I mean, you can't really talk about Beth Pearson, actually, as a character without talking about Claire Huxtable, because they occupy so much of the same space. You also can't talk about Claire without talking about Felicia Rashad.
Yeah.
People have had to do work to divorce their ideas about Claire Huxtable from their ideas about Felicia Rashad. And that, to me, stands as proof that, like,
this
image of a Black mother does matter to some degree. It's not nothing. So, I mean, you know, it's like you said, like the perfect Black mom thing, it doesn't work in real life. And then also it's like representative of a thing that people think that they want, but they don't actually want in practice in real life. That leaves like a window open. Like, okay, like bad Black moms. Do you know what I'm saying?
We could do this.
We could do this. Like, it's our time to shine. I don't have any children yet. I'm like, I'm in the group. Okay, I'm putting myself in the group. And so, you know, you might be wondering, like, where are all of the bad Black moms?
Just in media?
Yeah, in media. I mean,
you know, you mentioned from Everybody Hates Chris, like that type of deal. But it's interesting, like in Everybody Hates Chris, like all these are, for lack of a better word, in antiquity.
Like, yes, exactly. Exactly. There's not really that space that's being occupied right now. I think what I'm curious to see what happens as people our age get older, like as millennials age, because like I think what happened for a lot of Black women, like with Insecure, I think a lot of people are going to be looking for that, like about motherhood or parenthood. But there are a couple bad Black moms on Better Things. Like there's an episode in season 3, it's called No Limit, where Sam Fox has dinner with a bunch of her like grown women friends. And there are a few moms in the mix, specifically two moms, one Lala, played by Judy Reyes, who a lot of people know from Scrubs, and Lenny, played by Cree Summer, who people know from like literally everything from Inspector Gadget to like
Rugrats
to obviously a different world. And so Lenny and Lala are two characters who each share just like a few lines. What comes to a few lines of dialogue with Sam that feels so real and so human and so full with just a few lines of dialogue. I feel like I really get a window into who each of these women are. You got to see them enjoy their friends, but also when they talked about their kids and they talked about their family life, you could see that it was meaningful to them.
Yeah.
So I want to show you how Lenny and Lala occupy space on the show. And so I'm going to play a clip for you right now of Lenny joining Sam and Lala at a restaurant for girls' night.
I'm late. I can't believe I even made it.
Oh, I'm glad you made it too.
I can't believe you're here.
How's Randy?
Oh, he's okay. But his dad is dying.
Oh.
Yes. Show as usual. I'm taking care of the boys alone and his mama. Meanwhile, I'm supposed to get back to Thailand to finish the film. Where in the hell is everybody else?
Bathroom.
Yeah.
I want to show you kind of like how Lala shares some of the struggles that she's dealing with, like as a wife and mom and caretaker. So I'm going to play you a real quick clip.
I like one of mine, too. I'm not naming names.
Oh, why did we put ourselves through all this? It's insane. Nobody told me it was going to be this hard. I suffered through 4 years of IVF for this. Could have spent the money on a house.
Big house.
Yeah. But it's just so rewarding. Yeah, right. Not when Tiana's screaming now at me.
That was a really short interaction, but I got such a clear idea of who this woman is as a mother, as a friend, and as a wife. I got a real sense for how she moves through the world and what some of her biggest concerns are. And that happened like that.
Hearing from them felt significant. The construction of the episode has like a scene that I feel like actually is a kind of a staple of most bad moms content.
Yeah.
Which is basically like, sometimes we all get drunk.
Yeah.
Like, and so like, you know, that is not new. It has a, you know, it's a crystallized part of the bad moms movie. You see it pops up in Working Moms. They always kind of hang out and, you know, they're drinking and doing things like that.
It didn't have sort of like the pithiness that Working Moms has, mm-hmm. where it's just sort of like, I'm a mom.
There's like a, so let's talk about Working Moms real quick. So Working Moms is a show that was developed by, it's written, I think she sometimes directs as well,
mm-hmm.
And stars in, her name is Catherine Reitman. And it's set in Toronto, and it kind of chronicles the lives of these, like, somewhat of a rotating cast of women who met in a Mommy and Me group.
Yeah.
And their experiences. And it falls right into that kind of bad moms stuff, hardcore. And they're always kind of getting drunk. The show definitely is looking to provoke a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
It's looking to provoke within a genre that is kind of almost all about provocation. This genre is all about pushing back on, like, the things that make people feel comfortable about what a mom is supposed to do.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, this show takes that to the extreme. But it's interesting how even in that, there's still no space for us.
No. I mean, I watched the most recent season and there were a few moments that feature a Black mom mm-hmm. that like kind of seemed like she got their humor and like could hang or whatever. But they made a lot of those interactions either so insignificant as to just kind of pass by.
Or removed.
Or removed. Or they just were about race. And it's just like, that's how you can relate to this character. You're showing me the barrier that you believe is between you and this other mom. And not only that, like, you're showing me that you don't see the other mom as somebody who could understand your experiences. You're not seeing them as your equal.
Exactly. And I think a lot of that in a lot of these shows, I think, are related to class. It's not crazy to say white women of a certain, you know, class and socioeconomic status often exist within spaces where there just aren't that many, like, Black people, you know, sometimes by choice. And so, you know, I think that's a piece of it. But, like, it's also just, it's just interesting. So, anyway, to come back to Better Things and to see one Black woman participate, even just participate and communicate.
Yes.
It felt so much more honest to, like, even just, you know, even my mom takes a sip of beer every now and again. She is loose as hell off that sip.
I know. I mean, that's the thing is, like, I'm like, I know that, like, I mean, there are periods where, like, I know my mom, like, went with my aunt to go see Winona Judd, I think in Vegas or Arizona or something like that. I know my mom went to go see Cher during the Believe tour. Like,
how many casino trips have happened with a mom?
How many casino trips? Okay, I know there's going to be some bad mom shenanigans going on at the casino trips. But, yeah, I mean, I also like remember being like when I was a teenager, starting to A, understand my mother more as a person outside of me who is just there to provide me with my life and everything like that. But also as my sisters and I, my younger sister and I specifically became more independent, my mom was allowed to kind of like go off and figure out how she wanted to spend her time and how she wanted to have fun and what she was interested in again, because you know, you put a lot of that stuff on hold and things like
that. She had space.
She had space. And now it's like really nice in this part of my mom's life to see her enjoying herself so much, like with her friends and like taking trips and doing all this stuff, you know, like going out to dinner and having drinks with her girlfriends. Like I love seeing her do those things. Not that she did not do them when I was growing up, but it's like to really now be exposed to more of that part of her life is really nice.
Well, I think we didn't see it partially because we weren't supposed to because we were kids. But also, I think there's probably a protection of that space.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
of, you know, like what I have seen so many groups of like Black women or even just Black people, but yeah. mostly Black women, you know, they go out for a night. They're trying to have fun. Ooh. You run into, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, just like, there's so much constriction on like being a Black woman in society. Like, I can't imagine once you get to being a mom, like, you're tired, you've been working, you know what yeah. I'm saying? Kids are hard, you know? And you just wanna go out and have fun.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how much we don't get to see that as that type of recreation and that type of release for Black women and for Black moms
no,
in this context.
We really, really don't. There's a lot of like, sitting with a single glass of wine, thinking about the romance that could have been, crying over bills. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or like if you see, like you can see sometimes the acknowledgement of the hardships and like show sort of like what the mom is faced with. But the enjoyment, that's what I liked about the Better Things scene is like you got to see two Black women who were different from each other, who had their own individual stories. And like I will say, they do pop up later again in yeah. that, like throughout that series. The thing is, though, is I love them on that show.
Yeah.
I want women like that to have their own show.
Absolutely.
And that's the thing. Like that's the Black moms that I want to see on TV who are like, maybe they're going to get divorced. Maybe they won't. Maybe they hate their husband today. Maybe they don't. Maybe they also have to take care of, you know, sick parents. And like maybe they are going to go out with their girlfriends. Yeah. I don't think I plan on doing that, but like, I want to see a mom who's going to do that.
Sure. You want the option.
Yeah, I want the option. I want to feel like it's available to me. But yeah, like I want to see those things presented without shame and to have the Black mother be the center of the narrative. Like I said, the representation is not everything, but like, I don't think it's wild to want to be seen somewhere.
No, I don't think it's wild at all. I mean, I think that there's an interesting thing about that as well that I think we might start seeing sooner. I think we're going to get that show you're looking for mm-hmm. very soon. I think about, like, if you look at folks like Issa Rae Hoop, who came up and I think, you know, filled at least a space around almost like girl child, like, but
yeah.
just kind of figuring
yeah,
it
woman child.
Woman
yeah,
child,
yeah.
figuring it out kind of trope.
Mm-hmm.
I think she really has done a great job for kind of presenting Black women within that.
Yes.
And that's something that's very different. I think she deserves laurels for that. But I also think you can't ignore that that period is ending for at least that particular show.
I agree.
And I would not be surprised if the people who were seeking out that content, you know, who are also very interested in Tiffany's storyline.
Yes, and also people who have kids probably already.
Exactly. Who are now ready and at the point in their lives where they might be ready for that show. And I think there's a lot more creators who are hitting around that age who hopefully, hint, 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 nudge, 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 you know what I'm saying? Because
yes.
there's an audience to watch it.
There's definitely an audience to watch it. And I'm excited to see how things turn out. I mean, like, I don't know. I was thinking, I thought really hard about like a Black mom that kind of felt new to me
yeah.
and felt really full in her depiction. And actually, this is from a film, it's drama film, but Turquoise Jones, played by Nicole Beharie in Miss Juneteenth, recently felt like something closer to a story that centered on a mother who both loves being a parent and also has like serious reflection and lamentation about what her role requires of her, what she's had to give up in order to assume that role. But also somebody who like has not fully given up on herself.
Yeah.
I will say like that's a story that like takes place in the more rural South mm-hmm. and like, you know, is about a family that is not I don't even think middle class necessarily, maybe lower middle class or working class, but is of a different class than the types of moms that we typically see on TV featuring women of any race.
Yeah.
And that was also nice to see sort of like characters that felt knowable, but like were outside of the same milieu where we see so many women occupying right now. So I'm hoping to see more films like that, more TV shows like that. Like, to your point, I really do want to see sort of like the comedic take on the bad black moms. Yeah. I think there are so many people out there who'd be so great at that. Like, I mean, Regina Hall is right there. You know what I'm saying? Like, Regina Hall is right there. Like, she is right there. And I think that, like, I don't know if you ever saw this show. It was one of the first shows on WB. It's called Cleghorn. Starring Ellen Cleghorn. Ellen Cleghorn was actually the second black woman to be a cast member on Saturday Night Live. And funnily enough, the person who played her father was Garrett Morris, the first black man to be a cast member on Saturday Night Live. It was canceled within the first season.
Wow.
Basically, it starred Ellen Cleghorn as a woman who was, I think she ran a production studio or something in Soho. She lived on the Upper West Side, and she lived with her parents and her young daughter. And I liked watching the show. It was definitely like a family sitcom. I enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty good. Mm-hmm. You can't really find it online at all. Otherwise, I would have focused on it and showed you a clip and played it for you. But even as I was thinking about this episode, I wondered, was a show like Cleghorn too before its time? I mean, I hate the idea of before its time, but like, were people just so far behind at that point? Part of the reason why the show wasn't successful is because they couldn't conceive of a show with a black mother who was single and working and vibrant and had a creative career, you know?
Not completely unhappy.
Not completely unhappy and like enjoying her multi-generational family. I don't know, like but I would love to see somebody reinterpret like a similar, I just think there's a lot of terrain there, like a woman who's a working class artist. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Who like lives with her parents and has a child, like who like has a vibrant social life, but also like has parenting duties and like doesn't have a ton of money, but finds ways to get her work done. Like, I don't know.
It sounds like you want to see real people.
I would love to see real people. I would love to see real people.
Feels like the running thread.
So yeah. So I mean, you know, I hope to see something like what we're looking for in the near future. I think that there's a lot of people who would really be into watching something like that. And you know, when it finally happens, like I'm super excited to talk about it. I mean, I think about Ali Wong even too. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I would love to see like someone with that type of humor occupy that space as a black woman and give us our little moment to shine. So, bad black moms, wherever you are, we see you, we love you, we hope to know you. That was me and Eric Eddings on our show for Colored Nerds. You can listen to our back catalog wherever you get your podcasts. All right, now it's time for a game. And I've brought in a special guest, Alexis Williams, who produced that episode of For Colored Nerds, but has just this week joined the It's Been a Minute team. Alexis!
Yes, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Okay, so to introduce you to the audience, we're going to see how good of a liar you are.
Oh.
And we'll play a game now that we like to call, sounds fake, but okay. So in this game, you, my guest, tells me a story, and I have to guess if it's fake or real. So, Alexis, lay it on me. Tell me your story.
You know, my grandmother's retired, and one day she was watching daytime television, which for her is TMZ, and she saw a, you know, a sort of kind of polarizing, a little bit of controversial, but always gets the people talking figure on TMZ. Mm-hmm. She saw a person who we all know as a former dancer, now well-known reality star, Black China. And she was like,
"Oh,
this person looks very familiar." And she calls me up for some reason. It's like, "Do you know who this Black China person is?" I'm like, "Yeah, I know who she is. You know, I'm with the girls. I know the things." And she's like, "You know, Alexis, I remember where I know this girl from."
What?
"I used to babysit her because my family's from D.C. And, you know, Black China, her family's all from D.C. She's like, "I used to babysit her."
Your grandma used to babysit Black China.
Mm-hmm.
For Tokyo Toni, Black China's mom.
Yes.
Is your grandma going to be on Zeus TV?
She's a special guest.
Is she going to appear on Zeus Network? So I have to decide, now that you told me the story, I have to decide whether it's real or fake.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I think this story is true. I think that Black China and your grandmother are the right age, and D.C. is the right place for this story to be true.
It is actually not true.
What?
Yes. And the funny part is that I had it wrong. I was telling people it wrong.
Wait, so what's... Wait.
The real story is a little bit more complex. You know, it has a little bit more texture. It's a little bit more generational.
What's the real story?
So my grandmother was actually friends with Black China's grandparents. And my mother grew up with Tokyo Toni, Black China's mother.
What?
So they're childhood friends. And my mother was like, yeah, I remember just like hearing about her and things like that. And then my uncle called her and was like, hey, you know Black China is Toni's daughter? Because my uncle took Tokyo Toni to prom.
What?
So they're...
Wait, okay. So that puts you at... Hold on.
Uh-oh, 6 degrees of separation.
Yeah, 6 degrees of separation. So you're only like 3 degrees, 2 or 3 degrees separated from China. And thus four degrees separated from the Kardashians.
Oh, gosh. I didn't even think about that.
That's the first thing that crossed my mind. Okay. Alexis, I don't think you're doing enough with this proximity to fame, to be honest with you. Like, this is cool, but I'm like, you could be Calabasas if you played your cards right.
I don't know about that, but but yeah, it's just a really funny story. I mean, they have not spoken to Miss China or Miss Toni since, like, very, 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 very young. So, like, I think my mom, they sort of, like, you know, went their separate ways around 13 years old. But my mom was like, yeah, we were really close. We used to go to their house all the time.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wait, so that makes basically you and Black China god sisters by Black people.
You know what? Honestly, logic.
Yeah.
I am dead.
But you know what, though? Maybe this story airing nationally on the radio is going to be the thing that brings y'all back together. It'll be just like
that. I don't
know. I'm feeling it, honestly. I'm feeling it. I want this for you. Wow, Alexis, I have to say, this is now our third time working together, you being on the It's Been a Minute team.
Are you sick of me yet?
I'm sick of you yet. I'm like, you might be sick of me soon. But no, it's a pleasure to work with you again, to have you on this team, a team I already love so much. Thank you, Alexis.
Of course.
And I'm so excited to share this, but I'm actually welcoming two new people onto the team. One of whom comes to me from For Colored Nerds, producer Alexis Williams, who you just heard. And the other, Corey Antonio Rose, our new assistant producer. For Colored Nerds was created by Eric Eddings and me, Brittany Luce. We got social production help from Elise Ellis. This episode was engineered by Marcus Hom. The theme music was by Willie Green and Lookout. This episode of It's Been a Minute was produced by
Barton Girdwood,
Alexis Williams,
Liam McBain,
Corey Antonio Rose.
It was produced and edited by
Jessica Mendoza.
Our editor is
Jessica Plachek.
Our executive producer is
Verilyn Williams.
Our VP of programming is
Yolanda Sanguini.
Our senior VP of programming is
Anya Grundman.
And I'm your host, Brittany Luce. Thank you so much for listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR. Talk soon.
This message comes from NPR sponsor REI Co-op. REI has gear, clothing, classes, and advice for camping and glamping, biking and hiking, axing and snacksing. Visit your local REI Co-op or REI.com for the million and one ways to opt outside.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Rosetta Stone, the perfect app to achieve your language learning goals no matter how busy your schedule gets. It's designed to maximize study time with immersive 10-minute lessons and audio practice for your commute. Plus, tailor your learning plan for specific objectives like travel. Get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off and unlimited access to 25 language courses. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
All that sitting and swiping, your body is adapting to your technology. Learn how and what you can do about it.
I really felt like the cloud in my brain kind of dissipated. Once I started realizing what a difference these little breaks were making, there's no turning back for me.
Take NPR's Body Electric Challenge. Listen to the series wherever you get your podcasts.